Web 2, business development is just going out, forming partnerships. In Web 3, biz dev often is about let's integrate protocol to protocol, right? Let's integrate with other DAOs, right? But it's the same concept, it's just different execution method.
Hello and welcome to the Blockchain Pro podcast. I'm Adriana Bellotti, and today I'm chatting to Gemma Xu, who is an early stage investor with 30 plus projects on her portfolio. We talk about some of the differences between Web 2 and Web 3 startups and how to evaluate early stage projects. Let's get to know Gemma.
Hi, Adriana.
How you doing?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks for being here. I'm excited. Let's dive right in.
Sure.
Awesome. How did you start your professional life?
After university, my first job was actually investment banking in Melbourne. I completed a degree in engineering and commerce and then was lucky enough to start as in the investment banking team at Macquarie Capital.
Was that exciting? Was that what you wanted to do?
It was, to be honest. I didn't quite know what investment banking was until I did a few internships at uni and realized that I probably learned in those internships, I'd learned a lot more than I expected, right? And decided that, you know, that was the path that I wanted to pursue. And I spent nearly 3 years at Macquarie. And in those 3 years, I probably learned more, I reckon, than I would otherwise have done, let's say, maybe 6-7 years elsewhere. In banking, investment banking in particular, you work incredibly hard, long hours, but it's very fast paced, and that exposure you get as, you know, a 22-23 year old is unparalleled.
That's interesting. And did you stay on with investment banking for a while? What was your next step?
So I left sort of towards the end of my third year, and because I've had this, you wouldn't say, you know, this itch, but, you know, I've always wanted to do something myself, right? At the time, you wouldn't even call this, you know, want to be a founder or a startup. Remember, this was end of 2014 in Australia. There was really a tech scene. There wasn't really much. There was definitely no VC capital, a bit of angel money. But I always wanted to do something for myself. And it was around that time that Airbnb and Uber was getting a bit noise and coming to Australia. And so I decided that I was going to do Airbnb for travel experiences, right?
Okay.
And I was lucky enough to raise a bunch of venture money, both in Australia and in China, because we're targeting the China market. Yeah, and that's sort of got started in this whole new world of startups and, you know, and entrepreneurship. And it was, you know, in a way, it was, you know, ignorance was bliss, right? if I had known how difficult it was, you know, and the various ups and downs that I had to get through, then I probably wouldn't have done it. You know, but without that, you wouldn't have led me to where I'm now and, you know, and what I'm doing now.
Okay, I'm going to come back to this when we get to that part of the journey. But let's first talk a little bit about what happened with that project and how did blockchain came into your life?
Right. So when I was doing that, we actually had a few pivots. You know, it was early 2015. We were in an accelerator in Sydney that was backed by Telstra. And that really opened me up to, okay, so this is how a tech startup would do. This is what, you know, you have to do to raise money. This is what you have to do to get product market fit. All these buzzwords that people throw around now, that's when I learned all this stuff. But I knew that I didn't want to do anything that had a limited market to Australia, right? 25 million people is very small market.
It's a good test market.
It's a great test market, but, you know, I always thought my advantage was in Asia. Like, I'm fluent in Mandarin. I know a lot about Chinese culture. I've been there a lot. So I decided, look, I want to target the China market. You know, it's just as hard to do a startup in Australia as it is in China, which has, you know, 1.4 billion people. Well, at least that's what I thought. You know, it was just as hard. So I flew to China, and that's the first lesson I learned, right? You got to go where your market is and get on a plane. I spent months there, ended up moving there, had a team there, raised capital there, did, you know, jump through and doing business in China, startups in particular, is very, very hard. It was a great growing experience. Pivoted a few times, And then, and you know, bring us to 2017. And I was actually in Sydney on business for 2 weeks. And in that time, a friend of mine took me to an Ethereum meetup. I had no idea what it was. The meetup had, you know, was at UTS, and it filled out an entire lecture theater. Must be hundreds of people there, right? And it was just a very surreal experience because people there were talking about things that I had no idea, completely no idea what they were saying, right? And was probably the only time in my life where I was in a meetup that I had zero clue what was going on. So by the end of it, I said to my friend, I said, look, you got to tell me what that I just spent 2 hours doing. What is this thing called Ether and what are smart contracts? Why is everyone so excited about it? What is blockchain? And he did. He spent the next sort of half an hour to an hour give me a crash course on Ethereum. And that is also when that was probably one of the first times I heard about Bitcoin.
2017.
Yeah, this was, you know, I think it was start of 2017. And so that very night, I got myself my Ether wallet. Back then, my Ether wallet was, I guess, a bit more popular than MetaMask, and bought some ETH. And then very soon after, this ICO craze came along, right? And I put my ETH to work. I think I just multiplied my ETH within days. It was a crazy experience. So that was when I said, okay, this is either some new paradigm that's coming that I need to be on top of, or it's a complete Ponzi and it's going to die very soon. Having done startups for, you know, 3 years by then, 200 years, you know, 3 years, I decided that, okay, I'm going to give this a shot, spend some time just learning about it, reading about the applications of blockchain, right? You know, what is Bitcoin? What is Ethereum? And that was when, like, it's like a whole new world opened up about when I read the Bitcoin white paper, when I read up about what Ethereum can do, the smart contracts. And as a non-technical person, it was quite a hard read, right? It was quite a difficult, I'm sure, Adriana, you would have probably felt the same. It was quite, you know, it took me a long time to digest those 8 pages of the Bitcoin white paper. But I did in the end. I got a bit of help from others, you know, other people who were in my sort of investor network who were much more technical and who were also looking at Bitcoin. So we got together. We all sort of had little study groups and just read and trying to understand what was going on. And for me, what clicked was after, you know, spending a few weeks reading various documents, I realized that it was really this whole new thing, this decentralized technology. And the cryptocurrencies that was built on top of it was really an intersection of tech, but more than that, it was really maths, right? It was maths, game theory, finance, behavioral science, economics. It was really quite a powerful combination of all the things which I had deep interest in. This is very exciting, and I hope it's not a Ponzi, because I finally found, you know, there was something that I truly felt excited about and had no idea whether, you know, there was any application over the long term. But I'm like, well, something's got to be there. So, yeah, so I continued to read up and got a bit more active. You know, in hindsight, probably should have invested my entire net wealth in it, but I didn't. Yeah, and just went from there. And, you know, very, very soon, fast forward, end of 2017, start of 2018, market crashed. But there were a few things along the way that I was like, if this thing was going to die, it should have died. And it didn't, right? The first being September the 4th, when China banned the ICO, Bitcoin crashed, but recovered quite quickly. I'm like, well, that's interesting. Well, it should have died. When something that should have done something, but it didn't, that was, you know, just another small data point for me to say, well, maybe there's something there, right? And that happened over and over again over the years. And that helped me to build my conviction, really. You know, this is here to stay. And by now, you know, this is well and truly, I think, it's here to stay.
Yeah, we were just talking about how when we have a bear market, we build. So if you're new, this is your first podcast, you haven't heard anything about crypto, as in traditional markets, there are bear markets when the markets are down and bull markets when the markets are on the rise. So during bull markets in crypto, it's a lot of noise and we have to sort of wade through the noise to get some work done. But during bear market, the noise quiets down and everybody puts their hats on and work and work and work. What have you been working on?
Absolutely. So last 2 years, I mean, this current cycle, right, last 18 months, 2 years was just crazy. It was a lot of chasing deals, a lot of talking to founders, trying not to miss out, a bit of FOMOing every now and then, right? I was exhausted. By December last year, I was like, had enough. Secretly, part of me was hoping, you know, when is a bear market going to come so I can just take a break? Surely enough, it's here. And so I think, it, you know, a bear market's are really a blessing in disguise for people who want to build. So as an investor, I not only invest, I try and get myself more involved in selected projects that I like, that I think will be around for, say, 8-10 years, which, you know, is more than a lifetime in crypto. So I think two things in a bear market that I like to do. One is reading up. I actually have a collection of articles and books about crypto that I want to read that I haven't had time to write about, sort of more the fundamental side. So I've been spending a lot of time reading. And secondly, you know, getting more involved with the projects that I invested in at an early stage and helping them out, or, you know, where I'm actually advising them on token design, on go-to-market strategies. Yeah, so there's, you know, I'm working with a number of projects. I'm working, but at the same time, focusing on also on managing my current portfolio, of some which are still not public yet, which are still, you know, in building in the private markets, and others that are about to launch. Yeah, and just really building my own skill set, continue to grow, right? Because as you know, in this market, every day something's new, right? And it's in a bull market, it's really about just keeping up, right? And in a bear market, it's about, okay, we're kept up. So can we actually grow? Can we actually get ahead and try and think about what is the next big thing that's going to come about in the next sort of 12 to 36 months?
Do you think having been an entrepreneur and starting your own company has helped you be a better investor?
Yes, definitely. I think coming from Web2 space, and having also seen how a lot of Web2 themes came about and failed. So most of my Web2 learning was in China, right? It was in a much bigger market, very different to a Western Australian market. But having seen that and then applying some of that thinking, so things like, you know, in Web2, you always look at what's your cost to acquire customers, right? Is it through SEO? Is it through some sort of growth hack, right? You can iterate. The equivalent in Web3 would be, okay, so you're using token rewards to bootstrap your liquidity, your TVL, your user base, right? But that's not sustainable. Just like giving subsidies is not sustainable in Web2. So what are you going to do in Web3? So once you've overcome, you've had that bootstrapping period, so how can you make yourself more sustainable rather than just giving out free tokens? Things like, you know, in Web2, business development is just going out forming partnerships. In Web3, biz dev often is about, let's integrate protocol to protocol, right? Let's integrate with other DAOs, right? But it's the same concept. It's just different execution method. And fundamentally, it's all about the people. Like, I've been quite lucky, you know, in the old Web2 world, and also now in my portfolio, to have got to know founders who are very focused on what they're doing, who only do one thing at a time, which is very rare in crypto in Web3. Yeah, and who will move heaven and earth to get to their goal, or to get, you know, to build a project, a startup, to a point that they think is where that full potential is, right? But at the same time, I've come across other founders, you know, who may not be as cognizant of their own weaknesses, or, you know, who may not be as ethical. Right, there's so much money around in this world right now, particularly in crypto, where, you know, you have anonymous founders, you have, you know, you're only really selling tokens as a founder, you're not really selling equity, and tokens, if you read the SAFs, don't really give much rights to the investors, right? So, you know, I'm not naming any names, you know, there are founders, there are teams, there are projects which I would never touch just based on my own due diligence and experiences.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about that. I know we cannot give investment advice. This is not investment advice. But let's talk about how you choose the projects that you want to invest in.
Okay, so from and this is, you know, just about crypto and Web3. So starting with, is it doing a theme that I like? So themes that I like, I like many themes, but examples are, is it like anything with multi-chain, like cross-chain, right? Is it an infrastructure play? So middleware, or a bottom layer, mm-hmm. right? Because a lot of value gets aggregated there. Or is it, if it's a decentralized finance, a DeFi, or NFT or metaverse, an application that are great, how are you different? How are you sustainable, right? Beyond just giving out token rewards. Like, I cannot emphasize enough that giving out crazy returns is not a sustainable way to grow a project. You might be, you know, bootstrapping is fine initially for those, you know, for the initial user base, but it's not a long-term strategy, right? So what's beyond that?
You're probably going to crash very hard soon.
Yes. And I've seen, you know, I think it's already happening in some projects. So that's, I guess that's sort of on you know, what are you building and how are you different? How are you not just a bit different, but 10 times, 100 times different or better to an incumbent, because that switching cost is very high, that friction to switch across. Because as a new product, a decentralized project, there will be tech issues, right? There will be, you have like downtime, there will be like, you know, you have to do rollbacks or chain halts, and it's very painful as a user. So therefore, for a user to be able to say it's worth a risk to try this, you have to be like 10, 20 times at least better than the incumbent. Then looking at, okay, so your product's okay, but what's your go-to-market strategy? How are you going to attract the first, if you're a consumer-facing play, how are you going to attract the first 100, 1,000, 10,000 users and have them stay, right? Same as liquidity. You know, if your DeFi project, one of your key metrics is, you know, what's your TVL, right? I've seen projects do all sorts of things to growth hack, you know, TVL from nothing to say 100 mil, 500 mil very quickly, but is that sustainable?
TVL, by the way, is the total value locked.
Yes. So in a project, how much capital is being committed into that project from a user to be able to be lent out or to be able to be borrowed. And that comes down to your product market fit, right? You have product market fit, which I must say a lot of projects don't yet, even though they may be valued. So that's also that thing, right? You may be valued, the market may value you at $500 billion, but you may actually not have product market fit, because there is a lot of noise and dislocation between what's fundamentally sound and what the market thinks is valuable. So product market fit typically means that your cost of acquisition of your users, so the rewards you have to give out, is less than what you're taking in, less than the revenue you bring in, whether that be in fees, interest that's paid to you, or interest that's paid to the platform. Very simple, right? Cash in is more than cash out. That's sustainable. And at the same time, your TVL, your user base is growing. And then, you know, and the other point is a team. Is it team? Does it have a good record? Is it committed? Have they been at this for a long time? Have they, you know, just been doing this for, you know, 6 months because we're in bull market? Which is fine if it's, you know, if they've been for 6 months, but then, you know, have they shown commitment elsewhere to show that they can commit long term to a project, right? So all that's actually similar to Web 2, right? It's human nature, really. If you think about this, like, the product and tech side is just a small part. Well, not a small, but one part of many parts that makes a project succeed.
That is so interesting, and it's a very good observation about, if you're new and you have an idea and you want to make that idea go from zero to one, perhaps you just have to show your commitment and, you know, track record that you had building things for other people or working in other projects or being a part of other ecosystems, rather than, oh, I'm a first-time founder, I cannot do this. Yes, you can. You just have to do it harder because people need to believe in you.
And in Web3, there's, you know, a lot of open source tools to prove or to show evidence of traction, of commitment, right? It's actually easier than, say, in the past. You know, if you're a developer, you know, you can show some of the previous projects you've done on GitHub. If you want to show that you've had a history of contributing to different DAOs, then you can show that again in GitHub commitments, right? In commits, or many DAOs have on-chain, you know, credentialing, or you can show very, in a very public way, without giving away too much details, what you've done in the past in a way that's verifiable. I mean, that in itself is for another discussion, but it just shows that the openness and transparency of Web3 makes life a lot easier for both investors and founders.
That's really good to know. So what are some of the trends that you're following currently?
As the market matures, as applications become more established, cross-chain, multi-chain is going to be the future, right? And I think, you know, back in 2017, 2018, people were already saying that, but that was, I think it was early. because, you know, we could barely live on one chain yet. But now you can see, often you see applications, you know, start on Ethereum, cross over to, say, Solana or Avalanche, Polygon or whatever, right? So I think anything that helps a bridge, that make that cross-chain user experience better, right? I mean, there's still a lot of friction to trade, right? If I want to, you know, trade between chains or move my assets from one chain to another, it's expensive, it takes time, and often there's a weakness. The weaknesses are in the bridges, which can be hacked. You know, I think that improvement in that area. Another one is infrastructure level, particularly in middleware. So middleware is the layer that joins up sort of the blockchain and the applications. So often the middleware is very centralized. It can be censored. It can be blocked. It can go down. It can be expensive. So there are projects out there who are building a decentralized AWS or decentralized storage. That's very interesting. Right. And often you find these projects tend to be, I wouldn't say they're counter-cyclical, but they tend to be a bit less volatile than some of the other application projects. The other one that I'm interested in is around NFT utility and infrastructure that can facilitate that utility. NFTs have, you know, I think it's become a mainstream quite quickly, much more quickly than other fungible tokens. But the use case has to go beyond just, it's a great profile picture. Oh, that sits in my wallet, right? Or sits on my Telegram. They're, you know, lending, borrowing, providing liquidity for NFTs. The financialization of NFTs, I think that sort of vertical is quite interesting.
So lots of things to observe in the near future.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm keen to see how this utility for NFTs will play out outside of just, yeah, I have 20 NFTs in my collection.
Yeah, exactly, right? And often, you know, you can only see this collection if you're on OpenSea or, you know, otherwise it just sits in your wallet. You know, I think where we are with NFTs is like maybe where we were with sort of fungible tokens in 2017, 2018. I think a lot of it will go to nothing. And then from that will be sort of the NFT 2.0, right, where it has real utility. And I don't know what that would look like, but I think that's sort of what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that as well. It's hard to predict how something will evolve or what it will look like when it's never been done before.
Yeah, and that's what's exciting about this space. A lot of the old financial markets is about how do we slice the pie, whereas this is about how do we grow the pie, because there's so much unknown that's out there. And growing the pie is a much more interesting game than slicing the pie.
Yes, it is. What is your pipeline dream for this whole industry? Do you, you know, what's like, oh, in 2-3 years' time, blockchain is this, or this thing happened that I wish it would have happened?
Wow, that's a big question. In 2 or 3 years' time, I think it will look quite different to what is now. Just like, you know, it looks different. The market landscape's different to 2017, 2018, right? It would be good to DeFi sort of brought on this whole decentralized, you know, like the name says, decentralized finance, decentralized. It made a lot of what is possible in traditional financial markets and quite sophisticated too, to bring that into what is now possible at a decent, you know, user experience in the decentralized world. So an NFT is like sort of culture and art currently, right? You know, you sort of, we've brought in decentralized finance, we've brought in finance, and now we've brought in art and culture. I think what's next, sort of the big thing that's potentially be the next thing is governance, decision-making, right? That's where DAOs come in. Now, I have seen countless, probably too many projects around helping DAOs, DAO tooling, right? Which I think is great, but I think what's lacking is sort of more basic stuff like how to better structure DAOs, how to improve the core decision-making process. You know, for a lot of the projects, larger, more established projects, you know, I'm seeing a lot of action in their forums, in proposals, and that actually drives the direction of the project, right? Because they're operating like a DAO, which is great, but it's not widespread yet. It's definitely not efficient. And this is maybe getting a bit into sort of politics and governance, but I'm not a fan of things of like, you know, one token, one vote. I think that's easily manipulated. That's easily, and that's definitely not optimal. But I don't know what is optimal. Is it some sort of delegate? I don't know. But, you know, I think DAO governance and that making governance more efficient and more widespread, so decentralized governance would be great, right? Essentially, reinventing company structure. How does that work legally? I don't know. So don't take this as any sort of legal advice. It's definitely not. Just sort of hypothesizing what it could look like and what would be good to see in, I don't know whether 2 or 3 years' time is too long, is too short. You might take five, decision-making, because it actually, ultimately, it will change people's behavior, right? It also may hinder people's interests in vested interests. So I think that change might take longer and maybe more chaotic. So it might be 5-8 years. But I think, definitely DAOs that I invest in a project that's looking at sort of, it's collecting DAO data, showing DAO data, who's doing what, how much treasury is in the treasury. And I think that dashboard, that data aggregation, will become very powerful in showing the world, right? Okay, this is what we have in DAOs, and people will then aggregate or then move towards the DAOs of their interest and participate.
Yeah, I think a tool that could help people make decisions as to which DAOs to take part in.
And what each DAO is doing.
Exactly. Yeah, that would be helpful, because I think, that's a conversation for another time. it's a long DAO story, but
it is.
DAOs, definitely a great pipeline dream for blockchain.
I think so. Well, I think that's sort of the missing bit, right? That's not really been done that well relative to, say, DeFi or, NFTs, metaverse. But I think we need more people in DAOs, right? I think there's a stat where, only something like 1% of people in DAOs actually participate in governance. That is, that's not a lot of people at all.
No, it's not. We do need to do better. All right, the quick three. We are here at the final runaway. What are you currently reading, Gemma?
Wow, that's I haven't had much time to read as much as I would like. So the two things I'm reading at the moment, one is rereading The Art of War. So I've read that about 4 times now, and I tend to reread it every sort of 18 months because it's a good way to reflect on, almost like a self-reflection as I read the book about, what I can improve on in my own trading. So I do have a liquid portfolio that I trade. What are my own blind spots and weaknesses? And I think reading The Art of War helps me with that reflection.
That's very interesting.
I'm sure many of you in the audience would have known what the book is about, right? It's not just about military strategy. It's actually about what you should do in different situations in that really optimizes your decision-making, right? What you should look out for. So I think it applies in life just as much as in any professional life. And then the other book that I'm actually reading is nothing to do with work or crypto, is actually a Russian classic, Dr. Zhivago.
I love that movie. I've never read the book, but the movie.
The movie is great. And in fact, I watched it, and that's why I started to read the book. I love Russian literature, right? It's a great break away from, investment, crypto. It's my little outlet.
Most certainly a good choice. And what is your favorite crypto resource?
I have a list that I go through every day. One of them would be the Daily Ape. It's fairly popular. It's basically it's a Telegram channel that every day pops up, a list of tweets, articles. That's interesting, and often for me, it's a good scan of what the market is doing, what's the latest news, and things that I like. I would dig in from that. It covers a range of topics, DeFi, NFT, very fundamental tech reading. So it's a great scan, first in the morning.
I have not heard of them yet, so I will try that tomorrow morning. And your favorite project?
Oh, it's a hard one, given my portfolio. I would say currently, my favorite, if I have to name one, I think it would be a project called Pocket Network.
I knew you were going to say that one.
What it is, it's a middleware solution where essentially providing a decentralized Infura. So Infura it sits in between the blockchain layer and the application layer, where applications sort of have to ping Infura to send data, you know, do all sorts of fancy tech things, which I'm not going to go into. But in Fiori, it's very centralized and tends to go down. It may not be reliable. There can be congestion. And what Pocket does is Pocket is a decentralized version, right? So Pocket is secured and operated by a series of a network of nodes, which is, I think, it's probably around 32,000-33,000 nodes at the moment. And it's one of the few projects that actually has a product market fit because it's multi-chain, which is it's a big tick. It has real applications with lots of users using the network, right? Using the nodes. So I think it has some crazy stat. I think it generated around, and don't quote me because I haven't checked it for a while, but I think generated around like $500 million for the nodes over the last year. You know, that's pretty good return. And more importantly, it's driven by fundamental usage, right? So it's not just some crazy rewards used for bootstrapping, but it's actually fundamentally sound. So that's probably, and given that it's a token out, I think, you know, you can see, yeah, sure, it's come down a bit because of the bear market, but, you know, I think compared to a lot of other projects, it's definitely here to stay and will likely to do very well into the future. So, yeah, so I'm a hodler and I'm running a lot of nodes for them.
How do you run a node? Can anybody participate?
Yeah, so at the moment, if you're not technical, you can stake, you know, for stake with third party providers, and there's a list of them, and they're quite reliable. You know, you pay a monthly fee, and then what's left is, you know, these rewards that you get, the token rewards, and the token rewards come from users using the network. It's not hard to get involved because the tokens are listed on the exchanges. Am I even meant to be talking about exchanges on this podcast?
You can talk about whatever you want. It's just not financial advice.
Okay. There's another one which I'm a big fan of, but it's launched, but it doesn't have a token yet. It's Solve.finance. It's essentially building a financial NFT infrastructure to allow, essentially, bring in what, you know, in traditional finance would be financial instruments like convertible bonds, debt, hybrid instruments, bring that or building that out, I guess, in a decentralized world via NFTs.
Right. Well, so, that sounds so interesting.
It's launched. There's no token yet. The token isn't launched yet. It has, you know, it's worked with probably 35 projects now. It's one of the key use cases. It helps projects to manage vesting. So rather than getting a SAFT, you can just an investor would then receive a NFT that represents their locked up allocation, mm-hmm. right? Which, you know, vests over time. And as you vest over time, you would then go and claim your spot tokens from the NFT, which then, you know, you can do whatever you want with it. You can sell it, you can keep it, or if you are in need of urgent liquidity and you've got all your, you know, tokens locked up, you can actually sell the NFT on the secondary market to allow some investors who need liquidity to get liquidity without impacting the spot price.
But why would you even need a token if you can just transact, sell and buy the NFTs themselves?
Well, the NFT, the value of the NFT is underpinned by the spot tokens inside the NFT.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. It's like a voucher. It's an envelope that captures, right? That houses the token temporarily.
Yeah, it's like a wallet.
Yeah, exactly, right? It's a fancy name for a wallet, yeah. Because there's no token launched yet, it's a bit hard for users to get involved unless you can go and buy these NFTs on the marketplace. But there's no spot token yet.
All right. So I will put the links to these projects in the description. So if anyone want to go check them out, have a look. All right. Gemma, how can people find you?
I have a LinkedIn, but I don't really use it. The best way is probably to contact me on Telegram or WeChat. You can, I don't know what's the best way. Do you normally share these details? Do I share this?
You can speak them out, but I will put the handles in the description if you want people to contact you that way.
Sure. It's for both Telegram and WeChat is GemmaX88. So Gemma with a J, X88, and you will find me there.
All right. Thank you, Gemma.
Thanks, Adriana.
And that was Gemma Xu. To connect with Gemma, you'll find the links in the description. I feel so lucky to be able to have these conversations and bring people with so much expertise into this space to share ideas. I hope you found value, or may even have had an idea yourself. And if you did, go Buidl. Hashtag B-U-I-D-L. Yes, that's a crypto thing. You know it. Anyway, I will see you on the next block. Bye.